Summer is here, and with it, the annual ceremony of sport fishing. Across the country, tourists flood areas where the fishing is good, like the lake country of northern Wisconsin. But some people in Wisconsin say the fishing isn't what it used to be, and they're angry. That anger turns into fiery protests each spring when Chippewa Indians go to Wisconsin's lakes to spear walleye. The protesters say the Chippewa are destroying the walleye population. The Chippewa once controlled the entire northern third of Wisconsin, as well as parts of Minnesota, Michigan, and Canada. When they ceded the Wisconsin territory to the United States, Chippewa leaders signed treaties preserving their right to hunt and fish on that land. The spring ritual of spearfishing walleye is the modern descendant of that agreement. Now, hundreds of non-Indians in northern Wisconsin want to gut the treaties. They say the agreements are simply antiques, that it's time the spearfishing stopped. But the controversy involves much more than fish. Court interpretations of the treaties will determine who controls much of the natural resources in northern Wisconsin: timber, wildlife, and minerals. American Indian people are fighting similar land and resource battles across the country, and they're watching as the conflict burns in Wisconsin. Today we have a special documentary report titled Spearing on Lakes of Fire.
A little bit more speed.
Okay. It's been only 2 weeks since the ice melted from Lake Gordon in northern Wisconsin. It's a clear night, the temperature around freezing, and 10 boats of Chippewa spearfishers cruise slowly along the shoreline searching for walleye.
Pull in a little bit more. Stay right on the outside of these weeds here.
The walleye spawn this time of year when the water is still cold. At night, they swarm to the shallows. Many generations ago, the Chippewa living in this region discovered that if they held torches over the front of their canoes, the fish's eyes reflected the torchlight, becoming red, liquid sparks, making the walleye easy targets for a spear. The Chippewa could land dozens of fish in a one-night outing. At the site of Chippewa fishing with flaming torches, French explorers gave one lake the poetic name Lac de Flambeau, Lake of the Torch. Before white settlement, the Chippewa fished and hunted across the entire northern third of Wisconsin. The Lake Superior Chippewa surrendered the land to the United States in the 1800s, but the treaties they signed guaranteed them the right to continue hunting and fishing in that region. Over the years, the principle of spearfishing hasn't changed, but the equipment is now distinctly 20th century.
Go out just a little bit, Rube. Might get tangled up in here. That's good, right there.
Most Chippewa now use aluminum motorboats instead of birch bark canoes. In place of the torch, spearers wear what looks like an automobile headlight strapped to a helmet. The spearer stands in the bow of the boat with a 12-foot forked spear and jabs walleye as the boat navigates the shoreline.
Yeah, I see two walleye. That's awesome.
Small ones?
Yeah, little ones. I speared that one back there, but...
On a good night, each spear might get 40 or more fish.
Nick? Yeah? You guys passing it out tonight?
Bright April sunlight filters through the pine and white birch trees along the shore of Little St. Germain Lake near the town of Minocqua, Wisconsin. Woodpeckers and red-winged blackbirds flutter among the trees. Thousands of tourists come to the scenic lakes and woods of northern Wisconsin each year. Many of the visitors come to fish, and the fish most of them want to catch is the walleye.
Always has been a good fishing lake, and it's sad just to see the walleye being slaughtered. It's just hurts you.
Arlene Esch walks onto the dock of the resort she's run with her husband Eldon for the past 18 years. They call their place Serenity Bay, but the Eshes are upset. They say Chippewa spearfishing is ruining their lake and their business.
Well, when we first moved up here, we could go out and start the charcoal fire, and we could go down there and catch our walleyes. And in the last 3-4 years, they're just dying away. Our grandchildren aren't going to have no fish to catch if this keeps up.
I take care of the reservations, and a lot of them will ask us, have they speared your lake? And that, right away, though, they say they won't come then.
The Eshes and hundreds of other people in the area go to the lakes where the Chippewa spear and protest. The Eshes are among 3,000 people who belong to a group called Stop Treaty Abuse Wisconsin. STA organizes demonstrations against spearfishing. The founder of STA, Dean Crist, owns a pizza shop in Minocqua. And tonight, like every night of the spearfishing season, dozens of STA members gather at Crist's place an hour before sunset. Retired couples, young families with toddlers, and clusters of teenage boys pack into the restaurant. Most are dressed like hunters. They wear blaze orange caps and rain slickers, heavy boots, and camouflage jackets. Last year, they carried homemade signs and wore custom-made t-shirts with slogans like, "Save a walleye, spear a pregnant squaw." The protesters called the spearfishers timber niggers, wagon burners, and half-breeds. This year, Dean Crist told Stop Treaty Abuse members to avoid overtly racial statements. So now, the t-shirts and signs say things like, "No more spearing," and "Equal rights for all Americans." Dean Crist says in past years, reporters ignored the protesters' environmental and legal concerns and focused on the racist slogans.
There is no just reason to allow one group of American rights and privileges over the other group of Americans, and that's the issue we want to portray, without allowing the tribes the opportunity to hide behind the veil of racism.
The scene at Nokomis Lake is typical. The public boat landing is simply a clearing in the woods at the side of the lake, with a paved ramp, like a short driveway, leading from the road to the water. As the sun sets, the number of people at the boat landing grows. A gray-haired Chippewa man stands near the water, beating a ceremonial drum. 100 police officers in riot gear got here early and stretched fencing and yellow plastic ribbon along the boat ramp to separate the Chippewa on the ramp from the protesters surrounding it. The police stand inside the barriers, shoulder to shoulder, a few feet apart, facing the protesters. By sunset, hundreds of people are at the boat landing, including a few dozen supporters of the spearfishers. Many of the supporters are from other places, Milwaukee, Minneapolis, Chicago. They carry notebooks and cameras. They plan to gather evidence for court just in case there's violence. As darkness falls, the police switch on banks of glaring lights on the boat landing itself. The first boat of spearers pushes away from the landing, and the crowd gets noisy. Four boats of spearers leave the landing, followed by two law enforcement boats. On shore, half a dozen Chippewa singers and drummers perform a traditional song. During the song, close to 100 anti-spearing protesters gather in a tight ring around the singers. The protesters look angry. Some shake their fists. Some are drunk. Despite instructions from Stop Treaty Abuse leaders not to yell racial slurs, members of the crowd, including STA organizers, answer the Chippewa singers with a mocking chant of, "Hi, how are ya?" At the biggest protests, dozens of reporters comb the crowd, talking to and recording demonstrators. Some members of the crowd remain openly hostile toward the Chippewa even when they're interviewed, but most people tone down their remarks when faced with a microphone.
I'm with Stop Treaty Abuse, and we don't want this to be racial. We don't want this to be racial law. It doesn't make any difference if this was a bunch of white people out here, we'd still be here. It's not racist at all. It's the matter of spearing. They're supported well enough by the government. They have their homes built and they have everything else done for them by the government. They certainly don't need this for subsistence.
This is the 1990s. Treaties were made in the 1800s. I don't disagree. If they want to have their treaty rights to go out here in a Birds Park canoe with an old torch and spearfish and take it there on a horse and show them and give up their welfare and their free housing, then let them have all the fish that they can get out of a Birch Park canoe with, but not with the power boats and a five-pronged spear that looks like a devil's fork to me.
The spearers stay out on the water for more than 2 hours. When they return, tribal and state biologists gather under the bright lights on the boat ramp to count, weigh, and examine every fish the spearers caught. This part of the evening's ritual is often the most tense, as protesters press against the police barriers to get a better look at the fish and to yell at the Chippewa.
Half-breed! Half-breed! The sights are on you tonight, buddy! Don't hurt your hand, you won't be able to sign your welfare checks.
Many news reports this year said the demonstrations were calmer than those a year ago. Police arrested about 80 people this year, most of them for peaceful acts of civil disobedience. Last year, 200 people were arrested. There were fewer reports of rock throwing and other violence this year. But despite this year's smaller crowds, spearfisher Tom Molson says there was hatred in the air at the landings.
We shouldn't have to fear the fact that maybe one of these your kooks are going to go off, you know, because they don't like Indian people fishing. You know, that fear is still in Indian people when they fish on a lake. Every time there's a spear that touches the water, we see hate.
Some biologists say there are fewer walleye in the lakes of northern Wisconsin, but most say spearing isn't the problem. University of Minnesota Professor of Fisheries Management George Spangler has testified in federal court as an expert on Chippewa spearfishing. He says the Chippewa took 25,000 walleye this spring, and sport fishers will catch 30 times as many during the spring and summer season, nearly 750,000 fish.
The Indians are being blamed for this by the non-Indian public, but the Indians are not responsible. Non-Indian fishermen are responsible. Non-Indian fishermen will have to expect that they will not be able to take as many fish as they have been taking in the recent past.
In cooperation with the state, tribal conservation officers issue spearfishing permits one night at a time for a specific number of fish on a specific lake. State and tribal biologists determine how many fish the spearers can safely take from each lake. On a few lakes, the Chippewa take as many as half the entire year's allowed catch of walleye. The Chippewa do cut into the number of fish that are left for sport anglers on some lakes. But George Spangler says the Chippewa harvest is so tightly controlled it doesn't hurt the overall population of fish. Spangler says it's no more damaging to spear a fish in April than it is to hook a fish in midsummer.
What is the difference between an animal killed during the open water season, say by an angler, in the middle of July, an animal that would have spawned the following April had it survived? What's the difference between killing that animal in July and killing it the day before it spawned the following April? There's simply no difference. It's one animal gone from the spawning stock.
Spearfisher Nick Hawkins cleans walleye on the back porch of his home on the Lac des Flambeaux Reservation, a few miles from Minocqua. Although there are six bands of Chippewa that spear walleye in Wisconsin, Lac des Flambeaux members catch most of the fish. With a slender knife, Nick Hawkins deftly slices away one fillet of meat from each side of a fish's body and tosses the carcass into a paper bag. With his practiced hand, it takes Hawkins only 1 minute to clean each fish. In less than half an hour, he's cleaned all 22 walleye he caught the night before. Protesters say spearing is unfair because it's too efficient. It's not sporting. While it might take a hook and line fisher hours to land one walleye, spearfishers sometimes bring in more than 10 an hour. But Hawking says spearing is a harvest, not a sport.
There's no sport attached to this spearing walleye. It's very easy to spear walleye. This is a very efficient way of taking fish, and we make no bones about the fact that we're going out there to kill these walleyes. As soon as the season's over, giving them out, handing them out to family members. We're going to give some to the elders. A lot of them will be saved for ceremonies during the summertime. So, you know, walleye is, or fish in general, is one food that we don't really have to pay for. So it's not a real big expense.
The walleye are a welcome addition to the freezers of the people on the Lac des Flambeaux Reservation, but the tribal members need more than fish. Many of the houses on the reservation are substandard, health care is often inaccessible, and more than half the residents are unemployed. On the main street in downtown Lac des Flambeaux, the A&M Cafe is one of the few businesses that remain open. There's also a bingo hall, a donut shop, a post office, and a hardware store owned by a white couple and used mostly by white people whose summer cottages happen to be on the reservation. Here at the cafe, though, nearly all the customers are Chippewa. Co-owner Artie Buchholz is a Chippewa who's lived on the reservation most of her life. She says the cafe sells a lot of meals on credit.
The unemployed come in just as much as the employed do, you know. Basically, I think because they feel comfortable in this restaurant, which is what my husband, when he opened this place up, wanted it to be, an Indian restaurant, a place where we could go without people staring at us, without getting any kind of adverse reactions or getting treated differently.
The people of Lac des Flambeaux believe spearfishing rights and other rights guaranteed by the treaties provide a ticket to economic prosperity for the reservation. Tribal leaders thought they found a way to convert treaty rights into cash last year. They negotiated an agreement with the state. Lac des Flambeaux members would stop spearing walleye off the reservation for the next decade in return for $50 million. Spearfishers lobbied against the agreement, calling it a sellout of Chippewa heritage, and tribal members voted it down. Tribal chair Michael Allen negotiated the agreement, and he says the people of Lac des Flambeaux made a mistake when they rejected it.
There was education monies, there was monies to help our clinic, for our needs, for our elders, for our youth. You look at Reaganomics, what it did to tribes right now. I mean, we're just struggling to find monies and stuff. It's so goddamn competitive, you know, it's you have to write a super proposal to get funded, and when you do get funded, it's very minimal. Everybody's hurting for money.
Allen says fewer than 10% of Lac des Flambeaux members spear fish outside the reservation. The catch works out to about 8 fish per tribal member. Allen says the tribal members who don't spear are sacrificing tangible improvements in reservation life so the spearfishers can make a political point. But the spearfishers see it differently, especially some of the young spearers.
We're not living the American dream here in Lac des Flambeaux, man. This here is the third world, man.
25-year-old Wayne Valier is stridently opposed to any compromise on spearing. He wants to make money by expanding the use of treaty rights. Valier says the Chippewa should fish, hunt, and harvest timber outside the reservations.
We could take our timber rights, start a logging mill. There's different sponsors throughout the country that are more than willing to come in and start these type of businesses, start clean industry on the reservation, become self-sufficient, create jobs for our people. This is something we want. We don't want a handout from the government.
In early May, a federal court judge affirmed the Chippewa treaty right to hunt deer outside their reservations in Wisconsin, but the decision affects more than hunting. The judge ruled that the Chippewa have a right to half of all renewable natural resources in northern Wisconsin. Some attorneys say the ruling applies to game, fish, wild rice, and timber. Even before the decision, one Chippewa band had started logging in state forests. Spearfishing in Wisconsin is a particularly dramatic conflict over treaty rights, but similar disputes are unfolding across the country as American Indian people try to reclaim land and resources that once belonged to their ancestors. Across Wisconsin's western border, in the pine forests of northern Minnesota, there are no mass protests against spearfishing. There's been little or no spearing outside reservations, at least not until this year. In Minnesota, the three bands of Lake Superior Chippewa approved an agreement with the state like the one rejected at Lac des Flambeaux. Under the Minnesota Agreement, signed in 1988, the state paid the bands a total of $5 million a year, and the band's members limited their spearfishing to the reservations. The plan worked for a while, but the largest band, the Fond du Lac near Duluth, pulled out of the agreement last year. Fond du Lac members continued to follow the guidelines in the agreement until this spring, when two residents went spearfishing off the reservation.
In order to stop me from doing this hunting and fishing and stuff, they're going to have to lock me up. They're going to have to lock me up forever because I'm never going to quit.
Jacob Greensky sits in a canvas lodge on the Fond du Lac Reservation, smoking a ceremonial pipe with his friend Russell Shabayish. Greensky and Shabayish were arrested earlier this year for illegally spearing fish on a public lake. Greensky says he didn't see any part of the Fond du Lac's $2 million annual payment from the state, and most people of the Fond du Lac received no noticeable benefit from the agreement.
What did we get out of it? We didn't get nothing. I lost my hunting and fishing rights. It would be such a sad day when I couldn't do that, exercise my hunting rights. You know, I might be able to go out and, as the state says, and shoot one buck. All right, that one buck don't last over a month.
Greensky and Shabayish want their case transferred to federal court in hopes it will set a precedent allowing the Lake Superior Chippewa in Minnesota to hunt, fish, and gather outside reservations.
Gabriel, you want some soup? Do you want some soup?
20 miles away, Fond du Lac tribal attorney Henry Buffalo lives in a comfortable Duluth neighborhood. Buffalo takes a break from the stack of legal briefs on the dining room table in his modern split-level house. Buffalo says Green Sky and Shabayish are naive in their desire to use the treaties for subsistence, hunting, and fishing. Buffalo says the treaty rights are most valuable as a legal and political bargaining chip.
I've always believed that when my great-great-grandfather Bijiki signed that treaty along with all of the other leaders of the Lake Superior bands, that they reserved those rights basically for the survival of the group. It seems to me only logical that if we were to define survival right now, that certainly these types of agreements and exchanges that would occur would still accomplish the basic rationale that these people must have had at the time that they signed the treaty. Survival.
But Henry Buffalo says the Chippewa need a more direct say in the management of resources. He says the state of Minnesota allows the Chippewa to be nothing more than advisors. And he says the Chippewa might have to take the state to court to ensure the tribes have an equal part in regulating fishing, hunting, and logging. The Deputy Commissioner of Natural Resources in Minnesota, Steve Thorne, says state officials are determined to avoid a conflict as messy as that in Wisconsin.
Well, I certainly don't want to smugly say that it couldn't happen in Minnesota. I think without the hard work of a lot of Indian and non-Indian citizens in Minnesota, it might have happened. There's always a possibility that it might in the future, but I think the chances are small.
Court cases over treaty rights are still pending in both Minnesota and Wisconsin. But law professor Charles Wilkinson of the University of Colorado, a specialist in Indian treaty law, says the Chippewa legal claims are solid.
You often hear the phrase, the United States gave this or gave that to the tribes. In fact, the Chippewa were the landowners. The Chippewa had hunting and fishing rights unquestionably throughout the entire area that they controlled. The Chippewa knew what they were doing on hunting and fishing rights when they negotiated these treaties. They insisted that they be allowed to continue to hunt and fish, and in the modern era, the courts have upheld that.
Charles Wilkinson says since the courts will likely uphold Chippewa rights to the resources of northern Wisconsin and parts of northern Minnesota, the state governments would be smart to voluntarily share control of the resources. In Washington state, for example, tribal governments and state governments share responsibility for fisheries management, and Indians and non-Indians divide the fish. The tribal governments in northern Wisconsin are proposing a similar arrangement, but the state isn't interested. Sociology professor Al Geddix at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse says some state officials won't cooperate with the Chippewa. Geddix believes Governor Tommy Thompson wants the boat landing protests to continue, so Congress feels pressure to nullify the treaties. Geddix says that's because the treaties may allow the Chippewa power to block northern Wisconsin mining operations proposed by Exxon and other multinational companies.
What is really going on is that there's an underlying bedrock of racism in northern Wisconsin. It's always been there. It has simply been mobilized around this issue of spearfishing. But one of the sort of the long-term objectives of the spearfishing opponents is the abrogation of treaties. And of course, the primary beneficiaries of the abrogation of Indian treaties are precisely corporations like Exxon that have been thwarted in their previous attempts to gain access to Indian resources. And if one looks at this from a long historical perspective, we find a pattern in American history where once the dominant white society has decided that they need Indian resources, there is a wave of racist hysteria that justifies the encroachment of white civilization on Indian culture. This is simply the latest example of white civilization encroaching on Indian cultures.
The governor's negotiator with the tribes, Jim Clouser, who used to be a lobbyist for Exxon, says Geddix's claims of collusion between state officials and mining companies are far-fetched. Clouser says the reason the state isn't sharing control of the resources with the Chippewa is that the Wisconsin Constitution prohibits it.
So we cannot, as public officials in Wisconsin, surrender to others, whether that be the Chippewa Nation or Exxon Corporation. We cannot surrender to anyone else our responsibility to the people of the state to manage and protect our natural resources. They cannot be peers and they cannot be equal. Having said that, That does not mean we can't cooperate and work together.
Clauser says it's up to the federal government to devise a solution to the treaty rights dispute, but federal lawmakers are reluctant to get involved. Congress is considering a bill that would set up a federal agency to mediate disputes among tribal, state, and local governments. The federal courts will hand down guidelines and formulas for dividing the resources. Some treaty law experts, like Charles Wilkinson, believe Wisconsin will end its dispute with the Chippewa in the next 2 or 3 years by agreeing to share resources and resource management with the tribes. The state and the tribes are making some compromises. The Lac des Flambeaux say they'll fish only large lakes next year, leaving the walleye in small lakes entirely to sport fishers. In the end, it may be gestures like this that settle the conflict. But for now, the treaty rights storm is far from calm.
You done all year. Working up a little sweat there, are ya?
What are you learning about, you bad Indian?
It's a small percentage of the non-Indian people in the North Woods who protest at the boat landings, and a small percentage of Chippewa who spear fish. The majority of people, Chippewa and white, keep quiet about their opinions. Some members of the quiet majority are meeting, talking about joint tourism packages between Chippewa and non-Indian communities and other ways the communities can cooperate. But despite those discussions, it looks like next year will bring another season of protest. Spearfishing protest organizer Dean Crist says the demonstrations will continue until the federal government eliminates what he calls the Indians' special privilege to spear walleye. He says the smaller protests this year don't mean his cause is losing momentum.
I don't see the tone as diminished any up here. I would say clearly the people feel the only way they have of sending a message to the state and federal government is to go to that landing and say, we don't like what's going on. We want federal intervention to clear this problem up.
Spearfisher Wayne Valier is just as adamant. He makes his declaration through clenched teeth. The spearfishers will return.
We're going to be out there again and again and again because Indian rights are forever, for as long as the rivers flow and the grass grows. May the white man never forget our ancestors' blood. May he never forget our ancestors' sorrow, their pain, their anger, and their fear. May he never forget that. It's time for us to soothe their ancestors' bones and to revive their spirits. And let America know that Indian people were not extinct. We're not extinct. We're not away from the face of the earth.
Smile for the camera. Be proud. You're an Indian.
You're an Indian. Be proud. Be proud, you bastards.
Spearing on Lakes of Fire was written and narrated by Chris Tetlin and produced by Stephen Smith. Reporting by Jim Newman of WSCD Radio Duluth Superior. Technical direction by Alan Strickland and Bill Nicholson. Executive producer George Boozy. Spearing on Lakes of Fire is a production of the Regional Issues Unit at Minnesota Public Radio and was made possible by a grant from the Northwest Area Foundation.
If we have no wall-